Black and white, I like it.
Okay.
Welcome everybody. I'd like to open the regular Planning Commission meeting for October 12th. Commissioners attending, please state your name.
Dylan Hughes.
Wayne Thompson.
Alternate Nancy Costa.
John Verrett.
Shelley Price Gibson.
Thanks, Shelley. We have a quorum. The October 12th Planning Commission is called to order. We have a little bit of a different agenda today in that I decided that the parliamentary workshop discussion should happen from the get-go. And this is an opportunity for some of the key messages and insights people picked up on the training. So who would like to begin?
Okay, well, Elena is looking at her notes. One thing I think that's really important that came out in training was, everyone needs an opportunity to speak without interruption. As a practical matter, I think, being systematic and going around the table at least once before anyone makes any motion or draws any conclusion, discourteous that we get to hear what anyone is saying. So I think that is one of the real takeaways, is to just make sure that everybody has had an opportunity to speak on a topic, and that we try to give everybody equal time. And I apologize for grabbing the first position. So, Elena.
No, that's good. Yeah, that was kind of my main thing, is the no one speaks twice before everyone speaks once thing. So I don't think we always do that. So I think that would be good practice. Another thing I thought was an interesting thing for us to adopt is sort of the, I think she was calling it unanimous consent. So like in the past, when we've taken like a recess, a bathroom break or whatever, we'll make a motion and do it. And she was saying that in that case, we can say something like, if there's no objection, we'll take a 5-minute recess. And then it just acts as a motion, if no one objects, if it seems like something that there's no reason anyone would object to. So that I kind of like the idea of, if it's something simple like that. Another thing I think is good is in the motions process, she was really emphasizing like stating the actual motion over and over. So sort of it's like someone makes a motion, it gets seconded, and then I think procedurally Tina would then state it, we discuss it, and then it gets stated again before we vote on it. So then that way everyone's really clear on what they're voting on, and I like the idea of doing that as well.
Thank you. Okay, anybody else?
I'll make a comment. I enjoyed the training immensely. I learned a lot. I think it would, it's more orderly and respectful. And I don't have any of it down yet because it's new. And I don't have my cheat sheets here tonight, but I will use them next meeting. And I think that's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Shelley. Have a sheet here I was going to use. Anyone else?
I'll just reiterate, I think the importance of having everyone have the opportunity to speak and no one dominating the conversation is critical. I have noticed in my previous life, we made far fewer motions about things than happened here. So that notion of just sort of general consent, I think, is very useful. And we also used to just say all those in favor say aye, nays, and then any abstentions. And it wasn't this sort of go around. I know some of that you adopted because of Zoom, but it may expedite things a little bit just to try that too.
Thanks, Nancy. Pauline, did you have anything?
No comment.
Okay. I'm, I, I did because of the size of our commission meeting folks. I do get to say something instead of just run the chair. So I'm just going to comment on the fact that it seemed like the comment about having public comment was stated that it was vital for local governments to, you know, welcome the public comments and convey messages that's an option. And that the comment period, I actually just went ahead and set it in for the beginning and the end. And I am going to say it now, but we'll see if there's any comments from Zoom. But the beginning would be specifically on the agenda items and would only last 3 minutes comments. And I'm hoping that doesn't take up too much of our time, but I think it's important that we, you know, have work as a team with the community, and that the comments will give the community a chance to feel a little better about what we're doing, and also hopefully be participating more. So that is why I put that in there. And I will try my best to run the meetings as suggested, or as actually follow the rules. And round robin will definitely be on that, and obviously word for word of what we're actually voting on. I think that's all I can say about that. So if there's any other comments.
Real briefly, Nancy, I think I would agree that the number of votes that we, formal votes we take, is large. And that is that artifact that's in the Boulder Town Ordinances that says that all planning commission actions need to be by roll call vote. I think in practice, the final approval of a motion is certainly should have be a roll call. I would agree with you that on just like, you know, correcting typographical errors or that, and all in favor is more than adequate.
Okay, is that all the comments? I'll move on to the approval of the October 12th agenda. I may have a motion to accept the agenda.
I move to accept with one correction, and I'm glad Lee is on because I think he needs to clarify what he said. But on the second,
can we just do it the way we're? I would like a motion and a second, and then any other additions to that, we will.
So it's a move to approve with changes.
The agenda.
Move to the agenda. Oh, I thought you said minutes.
Oh,
I was
getting
ahead of you.
Okay, so this is for the agenda.
Okay, I'll second that, Elena.
Okay, is there any discussion on the agenda? May I have a vote?
John, aye.
And Hughes, aye.
Colleen, aye.
Shelley Price Gibson, aye.
Okay, great. All right, so passed. Let's see, the next thing on our agenda is a public comment period. Each person has 3 minutes. And the minutes. Okay.
So at this point, I will make a motion to approve the minutes with corrections.
Second, Colleen Thompson.
Any discussion?
Okay. So on the second page, third paragraph, I hope you're listening, Lee, because you need to clarify what you actually said. Lee explained that the Planning Commission cannot allow non-public prescriptive easements to block access. I think that should have read non-public private easements to block access, because we have absolutely no jurisdiction over public or over prescriptive easements.
Can Lee, you tell me again, second or third page?
Page two, third paragraph.
Page two, third paragraph. Okay. Down from the lead discussion.
No, John, the paragraph that starts, John moved to recommend to town council ordinance.
Okay. Could you repeat that, please?
Okay, so the sentence that I have a problem with is the one that said, Lee explained that the Planning Commission cannot allow non-public prescriptive easements to block access, creating a landlocked parcel. I think that was in the context of approving a subdivision plat, so that would be not non-public private easements blocking access, because I would be very emphatic that we have absolutely no jurisdiction over prescriptive easements.
Private easements.
So was that capture your intent, Lee?
Yes, I think that what I intended to say, and I certainly don't remember the exact words, but what I intended to say is that you can't allow a subdivider to create public, private, whatever they create that blocks access. And so the simplest way to have this be accurate, I think, would be to say that the Planning Commission cannot allow subdivisions to create a long landlocked parcel. Just reduce it to that. And that would be the broadest statement of it, and I think the most accurate.
Thank you.
Okay. I think that's it.
Oh, all right. So, can you, is there any other comments on the minutes? Discussion on the minutes? So, Peg, can you just say the motion again?
The motion will be amended.
The amendment, yeah.
The motion will be to approve the minutes with the correction on the second page. The Planning Commission cannot create a landlocked parcel.
Go ahead. Okay. I was just going to vote. Okay. All right. Can I have a vote?
Sure. Do we have a... Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Shelley Price Gibson, aye.
John Barath, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye. The vote passes. The minutes have been approved. Okay, sorry about that. I missed this. Okay, the public comments. It's open for public comments. Each person has 3 minutes, and they need to state their name and before the minutes. I just want to add something. We have learned that public comments are not recorded in the minutes, but they are obviously recorded on our recording, just so you know. So thank you very much. And I actually have 3 minutes. Is there anyone who wants to make a comment on the agenda? I'm sorry, the agenda is the subject. All right, seeing no public comments, we'll go on. Discussion on access and street standards. So Sam, we were hoping Sam would be able to come, but John has a description of what our access that were was in the notes that we got. John, you want to go ahead and is Sam on Zoom?
We'll see him.
Helena has a hand raised.
Oh. Donna, were you going to make a comment?
Yes, I had wanted to make a comment on the agenda, and it was regarding the rules, Robert's Rules of Order, that you mentioned taking on the part where you mentioned taking public comments. I think it's great that you take them beforehand on the agenda, but it really is almost sometimes impossible to make a full comment until we hear what you're discussing. And then we're not allowed to say anything during that time. And then we are allowed to say something at the end. this has always been frustrating. And I think the way the town council does it, where we are allowed to make minimal, limited comments on an item that is being discussed when it's being discussed, might be better. I don't know if the Planning Commission has different setup than the town council on taking public comments, but that would be my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. Okay. All right. So moving on to the discussion on access and street standards. John, do you want to take that one?
Okay. Thank you, Tina. Okay. So at a previous meeting, I showed three pictures, a gravel road in the desert, a pretty typical subdivision street, asphalt street, and a Washington County style, very urban subdivision. And I put it out under our ordinances, the Washington County urban style subdivision would be legal, that the suburban style asphalt street is sort of what our ordinances describe, not necessarily paved all the way, but our ordinances do say it should match the pavement of whatever it's tied to for a certain distance. But we also, you know, we kind of like that gravel road in the desert. So I think now we need to take that to a little bit more specificity. So I want to start with just, you know, identifying what problems we're trying to solve. As has been mentioned, the current very generic, as approved by the town type language, won't work after December of next year because of the state law changes. But we do need some minimum street standard for public safety and emergency vehicles. I feel that the current street standards don't reflect the rural character that's in the general plan. The distinctions between private streets and driveways for four lots may not make sense because it seems really the same requirements should apply to both. Another problem we have is that due to informal access in the past, there needs to be an explicit requirement for all future subdivision lots to, and I said need, it should say have recorded access to a public road. The current rules create hassles for small developments, but really do nothing to protect against a suburban style subdivision. We say that there has to be a private street maintenance agreement, but again, there is no standard for what an agreement should consist of. We require a drainage plan, but we have, again, no standards for what the drainage plan needs to address. And beyond public safety minimums, it may be appropriate to require private streets serving multiple lots to be constructed in a way that minimizes future maintenance. So I think the first question of planning, are there other problems or access issues we need to be solving or addressing in as we think about moving forward? And also, do any of those items need to be deleted or reworded?
So maybe something about maintaining.
Yeah, what was it? I was not clear what
maintaining agreements or maintaining, like, who maintains the road or?
Oh, okay. Oh, under number nine. The question, I think we, in the discussions we've had before, we pretty well all agreed that the Urban Wildland Code, which is kind of a floor for, and the question is, do we need to require anything better for a subdivision that has multiple lots in terms of durability, the way it's constructed so that it doesn't walk out every time it rains and so forth? There are pros and cons of that. Most municipalities, because they become town streets, has very explicit things about how thick the pavement has to be, how much gravel has to be on top, how much crown the road has to have, how often does it need culverts, and so forth. But those are all things that would minimize the need for future maintenance.
Right. And reading the Forest Service information that Lee sent, there are some statistics on how fast and how many people use the road that can be included. But obviously every road should be able to handle fire trucks. So that's another thing. I actually have some information I copied off for everyone because I didn't actually get all of the things that are in our ordinances put together for everybody on roads. And I'm just going to pass them out so that you can hold on to them and look at it as we go through this conversation in the future. I'm assuming we're going to actually be talking.
I can pass them down if you want.
Yeah. I'm assuming we're going to be talking about this consistently. Shelly, I'll get you one. Sooner than later.
Thank you.
Is this the
91.2? Yeah, but there's also, I didn't find the subdivisions. And the one other thing that I have is I have a copy of what Peter Benson uses for his standards. So you probably have one of those.
Yeah.
I've seen this before.
There you go.
These are different.
Oh, they're different? Oh, what are they?
This one has something else.
Well, I think maybe you want that one. Those are beyond what I handed out for the other one. So okay, as long as you all have it. Did you get one of these?
Yep.
Okay.
And then if you need me to, I can.
No. That's
I just can't have an email them for sure. Yeah.
So this is great. And I can do that. And this one, yeah. Anyway, we don't really have to go over this specifically. I just wanted it to be. It is the ordinance that we have in place, and obviously, can be used as a tool to figure out what exactly we want to actually deal with.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, these standards that Tina passed, these I believe come pretty much from the Urban Wildland Interface Code. And that definitely describes a fire access road. One thing in terms of appearance for the town, our ordinances require a 20-foot road, which is wider than a lot, many spots on Lower Boulder Road. It's almost as wide as the street here in front of the town hall. And if the fire code itself would allow a 12-foot travel surface with 20-foot clear, which means you're not driving the fire truck through brush. For example, the 20-foot width that we have, actually it's 22 feet in our street standards. What we want, or do we want something narrower? So, what other questions just focusing on what we're trying to solve with the revising our access standards, are there other issues? So, do we require a fire code minimum or do a higher standard for a subdivision road? Elena, you've been through this a lot.
Yeah, I was going to say I should disclose again, but I have a subdivision and streets will affect me in the works. But yeah, it does seem like overkill that a small subdivision can be required to have a 22-foot wide street when the public street that you access that subdivision by is not that wide. It seems a little ludicrous to me. The width feels like the main thing. In terms of other standards to make it drivable, I'm not sure what the right way is to determine those. I think that gravel, if well-maintained, can be okay. I mean, just driving around town, really, it's people's houses are mostly easy to access and they almost never fit these standards because they don't have to. But yeah, I guess I think they could be a little more adapted for our rural environment for sure. Because I don't think we want every time we go to someone's house to be on 22 feet of gravel or pavement instead of just like a nice lawn or irrigated pasture or something.
Great. Thanks, Elena. Shelley, do you want to go ahead?
Just that, you know, I might be out of line in my thinking today. Anyway, acts of God. You know, they put that in phrases because if we do have a downpour or something happens, you know, we're talking about subdivisions. There's four or more houses, you know, just because it happened in front of somebody's place and maybe doesn't affect the whole community, they should know that they are all responsible for fixing it. Maybe something like that can be in it. And the other part is when people sell, how do they, we let them know they're part of a subdivision that they will be responsible for a road. That's my only comment that I can.
So Shelley, that's great. What we have now, I think, or have been looking at now is the street maintenance agreement with those on those private driveways. Is that something you are would fit for?
Mostly for subdivisions is what I was thinking.
Okay. Come out with some kind of agreement.
Elaine, any comments?
No, I don't right now.
Yeah. Well, just kind of building on that, you know, along those lines, Elena, we've also required Ray Gardner for his campground to have something that's wider than Lower Boulder Road. So
yeah.
I think that's what we can definitely reconsider in fixing the standards. Since Sam hasn't logged in yet, I'll paraphrase what he told me, and that, you know, there has been a lot of these areas in town, if you're on slick rock, it's no problem. If you're on blow sand, it can be a problem because blow sand doesn't compact. What Sam said a good road in Boulder is 6 inches of pit run fill with some clay in it, topped by 4 inches of road base.
And then, can you repeat that?
Yeah.
Pit.
So he what he had said to me was 6 inches of pit run fill, which contains clay, but it's not meeting any spec, and then 4 inches of what UDOT calls road base. And if you don't want that to your road, you probably need to put a little bit of gravel on top of it.
So road base or gravel, is that what you're
saying? Road base is that's a term that if you go call up a Brown Brothers or the people at Escalante who sell gravel, and you ask for UDOT road base, they know what you mean. It's got some specifications for the size of the material and the amount of clay in it.
Yeah, it's different than gravel.
Yeah.
It's more pebbly and clay kind of. Yeah. Where it is.
And the key is that, but that gives you about 10 inches of compacted material to drive on. And I would say from my personal experience, that makes a road that stands up, whereas if you don't do the compaction, the first rainstorm washes it out.
Mm.
So, you know, we could certainly codify something like that. As I say, most towns have very detailed specs, but look at them. In our case, I think a very brief, like cross-section drawing. We could have Jones and DeMille prepare a drawing, and we could incorporate that by reference in our ordinance for what a minimum subdivision street needs to be, would be a good step forward. But I personally think that we could certainly allow 12-foot travel surface on a 20-foot cleared path with turnouts every 150 feet, which is what's in the Urban Wildland Code. And that would seem to be more typical of the longer driveways we do see in Lower Boulder. I think that.
Yeah, turnouts being like pull-offs on the side.
Yeah, where someone can pass.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what they used in the Boulder Mesa.
Yeah, so it's basically a single lane road with places you can pass every 150 feet.
Why, do we feel like people need to pass each other that often?
That's sort of...
Well, it would help with like their fire truck or anything like that, or their, you know, whatever is working out.
It's not passing in the same direction, right? It's, you know, if you got cars coming, which could happen fairly often.
Yeah. But if you already have the 20-foot total clearance, couldn't you just, isn't that why you have that, to just use that as a shoulder?
Could be. It depends on your how soft the material is.
Yeah.
But I think still, I don't think we need 22 feet of gravel.
No, I agree. But I just have...
How about a turnaround?
Well, that's a separate thing. Yeah, they'll have to have that anyway.
Shelley, you brought up turnarounds. Yes, the handout that Tina gave has drawings of the turnarounds, fire truck turnarounds. But yeah, you do need that at the end. As far as I think, one of do people agree? Does it make sense to have different standards for private streets serving 5 lots and private driveways serving 4 lots? Or are they really the same, that our concern is public safety of getting to the lot?
Public safety of getting to the lots.
Yeah. That's sort of my conclusion, that we should probably, private driveways should be thought of as serving 1 lot, and a private street's anything that's serving multiple lots.
You say
that I jump in here?
Yeah, Lee?
Yes. I think that you just ran over a point that isn't clarified in the existing language about driveways. My guess is that whoever wrote the original version of that assumed that a driveway only served one home, and that you could have 4 different driveways serving one home each. As part of a subdivision. That's not really what it says right now. And so you could interpret it to say that 4 homes could be on 1 driveway, but it makes a pretty big difference in what you might want to require in the way both of construction and a maintenance agreement. If you clarified the language to say, hey, a driveway serves 1 home, that would really make it clear what's indicated to me. Whereas if you're saying a driveway can serve 4 homes, then you're really talking about a driveway that should be a private street. And I think that's one point that I want to make, is that maybe there's been a lack of clarity based on an assumption about things all along when it comes to driveways. The second thing that I'd like to plug in is that so far the conversation hasn't hit what's actually, from a long-term, long-run maintenance point of view, the most important thing about any road, which is how you manage drainage. And I really feel like the whole conversation could be boiled down if we just had a picture of what we have in mind. And if I may share my screen, I have such a picture here that I think it would be worth having everybody look at.
He's clear to share.
I'm clear to share? You cannot start screen sharing while the other participant is sharing. Okay.
Yes, just that. Now you're clear.
Now I'm clear? Okay. Share screen. Okay, here we go. Share. So this is from the Forest Service Maintenance Handbook. This is a maintenance level 3 single lane road with a gravel surface and gravel shoulders. And it's in a somewhat more forested environment than Boulder. And it's probably a bit wider than is absolutely necessary. But you know, if we could have an agreement from the commission that this is the type of subdivision road that you would like to see in Boulder, and that driveways could extend off that to serve homes one at a time, we would have the essence of this and be able to rely on the Forest Service standard and, you know, the Forest Service illustrations and the standard that that accompany it. And I kind of think, you know, we get into a discussion that's going back and forth over widths and turnarounds and all the different angles. And I'm wondering if just saying, look, here's the picture. If everybody agrees on the picture, it's not hard to write the standard. Any thoughts? We can.
I like what Lee just said. I mean, so you just scroll down to another picture. What's the picture below that, Lee?
This is the same class of road in a different forest. It's a little bit narrower. The Forest Service does not have a stringent road width. The Forest Service, as you know, wants a road that's wide enough that its equipment can pass, which of course would include its firefighting units. And so these roads don't get any narrower than about 16 feet. There's another level three, your basic gravel road through the countryside that we are all accustomed to seeing. Here's a slightly less well-surfaced maintenance level three. And then let me scroll on down. Here's a maintenance three that's got grass down the track, but has the gravel surface that will hold up and has the vegetation obscures it. You can see that culvert hiding down there, though. These roads, the thing that makes Forest Service roads hold up is not that they're wide, not that they have a remarkable surface. That makes them hold up is that the Forest Service insists on having good drainage. If you want to look at a maintenance level two, is not for passenger vehicles. According to the Forest Service, it's passable only by high clearance vehicles. If you want to look at a four, let me get scrolled on up here. Okay. There's a four, a gravel four. There's a partly paved four. There's not a lot of difference visually, except that they put a sturdier, more robust surface on it. And then some maintenance level four roads are paved. But it seems to me that if you were going to talk about what seems to make sense in Boulder, at least based on experience and all something like that, if that's the picture, then the discussion can be guidance for, hey, that's the standard we want. And that's a standard that will easily comply with the wildland code. And there you go. And then we would be talking about driveways not having to meet that standard, but a private street or a public street, whichever the subdivider ends up creating, would have to meet the standard. So I don't know. I just offer this because it's visual. And I think this is the type of conversation that can get really lost if you just have words flying around and one picture might sum it up and people would say, you know, either, hey, that's too much or that looks fine. And based on what you say, we could move on with writing a standard.
I thank you, Lee. And I think that, you know, I think that picture is extremely helpful. The problem I have, and I may be bending over backwards to be keep Boulder what it has been, but if you go to the next step, which is the Forest Service construction standards, you're into something like a 600-page federal contracting document that talks about compaction with nuclear density gauges and all sorts of engineering calculations and so forth. So we can't just mindlessly adopt the Forest Service road construction standards. And what I'm trying to avoid is that we have basically allowed some pretty informal access to these small subdivision, And I don't want to trigger a massive engineering analysis if we can avoid it. Sam Stout and I talked about the idea of, okay, how do we address compaction?
And so I have a...
You do compaction with a nuclear density gauge. But in Boulder, that means somebody's got to come over from Richfield on the day that the road is being constructed, this nuclear density gauge to measure the compaction. That's for a small subdivider is a big cost. And I'm trying to hit that basis between kind of the informal, what Sam Stout has always done. He drives his tractor on it, looks how much the wheel sink and says, yep, that's compacted enough. And an objective standard and an ordinance where somebody's got to come with engineering type instrumentation.
Well, that's a good point. And it would be easy to get some individual pieces of those standards, putting people way over on a cost of the road. My sense, though, is that if we say this is what it ought to look like, then we can have a standard that says, you know, something maybe a bit more robust here. But you know what this says, if you read what that says, maintain the crown and keep the drainage functional by properly maintaining the ditches. In the road showed above, removing the berms from road edge would make a difference. But I think we can, if we share a picture of it, share an image of what's there, and share an understanding of the functionality, which is this road should not wash away in the first thunderstorm and it should hold up a fire truck. Then we can say properly compacted, properly drained, clear vegetation to the width that we agree on, and not have to tie it to a set of public works standards. I don't think we can find anywhere, John, a set of public works standards that is going to fit Boulder very well. They're all too complicated. Even the simplest ones, I mean, I think I sent you the link to that one from South Dakota. Even that requires measuring the compaction. If we don't want to get down to those types of requirements, and I'm not suggesting that you should really, I think what you see here is there's a crown, the ditches are free, vegetation is kept back, which in Boulder is less of an issue than in some other environments. Curves or whatever can be marked with warning signs if need be. It's not very hard to write a set of standards that refer to an image, which we can steal from the Forest Service, it's public domain, and to the Wildland Code, which, you know, the Wildland Code is great, but it doesn't deal with drainage or compaction or those types of questions. If we just put in a generic standard of properly compacted, properly drained, and the city, if it wishes, says, we're not so sure about this, we'll bring in a consulting engineer to look at it.
Lee, I need to
talk
to
you. I think we could do that.
The problem is SB 174, and you know it as well as I do, says that you've got 15 days to approve a subdivision. And if you go through the four review cycles and don't come to consensus, it goes to a panel of engineers. So if we have to have something that will function under that those set of procedures within a year.
Well, John, you and I both know that what the engineers in the suburbs of Salt Lake City do is they use the Utah Public Works Standards, which are 300 and some odd pages long, which don't apply, I mean, don't even contemplate a road like this, right?
But I agree.
And we can't get stuck in that space. We're going to have to write a very simple set of standards that if the town felt it needed to, it could retain its own engineer to assess compliance. But the slope into the details gets really slippery really quickly unless we keep it simple. And
what?
In my mind, if you give people an image of what they're supposed to build, that's really good direction.
But an image doesn't belong in an ordinance. I would
I have written thousands of images into ordinances, John. I mean, you
I'm
just
telling you on that point. Let's not argue here.
Right, there's no arguing at even if it's a reference to something else in the ordinance.
We
have to give them. I have to give people direction they can actually use, which is the point you keep making over and over again. And what I'm saying is that I can't think of any better way to do it than to say, here you go.
Well, let's focus back on, okay, you brought up drainage. Normally, I would say we have to have drainage that withstands a 100-year flood, which nowadays happens about every decade because of climate change. But that would require an engineering calculation because it depends on the watershed area and the soil. So
right.
One approach we can go is to have a set of performance standards and say that what I'm almost inclined to do is to have a set of performance standards and say that the applicant has to have an engineer design the subdivision streets to meet these standards and trust the engineer's reputation and license as our guardrail to get it done. That would be a route that we could go, but it will add a lot of cost to small subdividers.
Yeah.
But it's certainly a discussion we should have, and that is just simply saying subdivision roads have to be engineered, and the engineer has to take responsibility that it's an adequate road meeting the urban wildland interface code.
Yeah. Well, if it just has to meet the wildland drainage wildland code, then they don't even have to look at drainage.
But says it all. It's all the trouble is the urban wildland code doesn't define an all-weather road, and I would agree with you. Drainage is important.
I just think that I think you and I are pretty much on the same page, actually. If we just said, look, here's some performance standards, proper crowning, proper drainage, proper vegetation clearance. It meets the wildland code. It meets this image of a rural road that we all have here. You put images, if you want to keep images out of the code, then you put images in the general plan.
Yeah.
So, and refer to it from the code.
Okay.
And then you've got a picture. Other than that, I don't see how we're going to, we could spend a long time trying to come up with slightly more complicated language without adding, in my opinion, without adding much value.
So thank you, Lee, go ahead.
So what I would like to see is I'd like to have you, Lee, what you've just said, see that written, how the town could use it. Can you do that, what you were just saying? I mean, what you're telling us right now, could you write that up so that we could at least have a beginning to see what
I can
that
do that.
I would like to, because that would at least give us a start as far as that goes. And I have another comment too, is I like the way that boulder looks right now. And we're talking about adding housing, and we're looking at people buying more property, developing more property. And I think that as a town that we need to have certain standards. I like the way that boulder looks too, but I also know that as more people move in, that there should be standards. It is going to change the look of Boulder. We've already talked about that. And so the streets are going to change too. So we're going to have to go forward with changing the look of Boulder a little bit.
Thank you, Colleen. Does anyone else have a comment?
Go ahead, Andy.
No, go ahead.
I have a few. I like the idea of an image in the code. I think that the more we can make the code digestible to the average person, the better. And I think images help do that. As far as drainage goes, I feel like it would be nice to have a standard around that. And I think it's important to remember that there are maintenance agreements around these private streets. So if a 100-year storm washes something out, the owners will have to repair it. It's not like it's going to just stay like that. There are things in maintenance agreements to ensure that people fix those in a timely manner. It would be great if we could give people specifications so that they can avoid those costs and just do it right from the beginning. but it's not like they would just be wrecked forever. Another thing I think is good to keep in mind is that, I mean, it's written in this way for subdivisions, and we could write it in for private streets in general. But Pete, or whoever the fire marshal or person is at the time, does come in and check and has like his own standard of whether or not our Boulder fire truck can get down that road. So in terms of compaction and all of that, that is a nice safety we have, is that he'll check with the actual piece of emergency equipment that we have in Boulder versus trying to adopt something from a place that uses something else. My last thought is that I would recommend strongly against having an engineer do that kind of thing, or having the applicant get an engineer to design the street. I feel like that's unnecessary cost and kind of prohibitive to these smaller subdivisions that we've talked about that are helping people afford to stay here.
Thanks, Elena. Nancy, do you have a thought?
I had a question. So this code, right now, all of this is in our subdivision code. So when we move away from having any subdivision code, where is all of this going to be? Is it going to be part of a checklist that, because that, as we talk through this, I mean, we have to figure out how you put these standards and guidelines in place so that people follow them. And a checklist, and I like the image. I don't think images belong in ordinances, though. I think they could be in a guidance document for how do you propose a subdivision and what is it going to look like. So I'm just trying to sort of figure out how this change, is this a change we're going to make immediately? And then next year, when we're looking at how we deal with SB 174, we have to do something else with all of this.
Okay. We'll probably get to that later in the meeting here, but we still will have a subdivision ordinance. But the way it has to be thought about, it's very much like the building codes. You have a set of very objective stat rules, and if you meet all the rules, you will get approved.
It's a checklist.
Well, not necessarily a checklist. It's building codes say that the foundation has to be 24 inches wide and 6 inches thick. Yeah.
But then you go on to the next one and you check it off.
Yeah, to that extent, yes, it is a check. But it's a set of objective standards. And the problem is that ideally they should be clear enough that the applicant can read the standards and know exactly what they have to do to be approved.
Right.
And these would be there. I think I think I would agree with trying to put down those minimum words. And I have previously shared some other documents with Lee he can look at to get that the description of what he's saying is an adequate road in writing. But let's talk a little bit about.
I have a comment.
I do too.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Lee, the one thing that I keep thinking about is that each road has its own traffic and it's, the amount of traffic that's on it. As far as developing your road, is there any way of adding that into the equation?
Yes, and one of the questions that I would ask you, coming back with something written, if we're going to go with Colleen's suggestion, is whether or not at a certain point we want to up the ante, and have this image become the image of a slightly, of an actually engineered road. And I would say, if you get a subdivision that is, shall we say, 20 units or more, I think the stakes are higher, the amount of traffic is higher. And so there does need to be a tiered system, which again is why I've been using the Forest Service as an example. If they go up to where they're carrying more traffic, then it looks like this or this. And, this the Forest Service maintenance level 4 in my mind, if you had 20 lots, you would probably want to do that. And that may not be the magic number. It might be 16. It might be 28. I don't know. But there is a scale of subdivision that is possible on some of the larger parcels that I think you get past the concerns that were raised about the cost of engineering and say, look, that if I'm selling 20 lots, I'm in a profit-making business. I'm not a homesteader anymore. I'm not the small guy to or small gal or whatever you want to say. That we want to encourage to be able to do business affordably in Boulder. At the point that I'm selling 20 lots in Boulder, they're probably going to be $1 million lots, huh? I can afford an engineer at that point, and I should. So I think we can create a tiered system, again, similar to what the Forest Service uses, to make sure that when there's a larger proposal that generates more traffic, it's adequately dealt with. But I think everybody's concern here and mine is to somehow make this feasible for a person who's doing three or four lots and does not have enough to invest to build to design. Actually, it's the design that's the issue, to design an engineered road and to do things like the compaction tests. I think that that's feasible. And I think, you know, at some point, if you get up to, say, 20 lots, which I guess is the number I got in my head, but it isn't magic, then you can say, hey, yeah, the cost of engineering are acceptable at that scale, and you move on. And at that point, their engineer talks to an engineer appointed by the town and they agree what works, which is really what's contemplated by SB 174. The public is not invited to the conversation by SB 174. So we have to have a standard that can deal with those bigger proposals if they show up.
Great. Thanks, Lee. So, Elena, did you have something?
Yeah. Let's see which one I want to do first. I think two things. I think it's good to remember that we're talking about private streets mostly in terms of subdivisions. And this obviously, like, yeah, that's one category right there, but it's not that people only have private streets ever in a subdivision. There are other reasons to have private streets as well. Subdivisions seem to be the only impetus for people to actually make the change. But people like the existing little collection of lots where my subdivision would be, they could all, without my subdivision, decide that they want the road to be in better condition and bring themselves up to a private street without needing subdivision approval. I also wonder, and this, unfortunately, there probably is no way around this, but I guess it feels frustrating sometimes to enter a situation where no one has been held to these standards before. And so when we're thinking about these subdivisions and trying to make these more attainable to people, potentially, you are required to bring up the entire road or street that how the houses are being accessed by these driveways already. And I wonder, I mean, there's really no way to retroactively hold people accountable to that and make them bring their streets up. But I do think, if we want to, and that is assuming we do, I do want to make these things more accessible to people. I wonder if there's any possibility in the future of, and this is maybe a different discussion for a different day, but I don't know if the town is interested in trying to find some funding or something for these types of projects so that either more subdivisions with attainable housing in mind could get a little help with these kinds of things for bringing up streets that a bunch of people use up to standards, or even, you know, for example, the houses, like I said, near me, even without mine happening, if they decided they wanted to make a private street, there could be some sort of matched funding there, because it does, those houses could catch on fire as easily as one in a subdivision could, but the street standards are not in place there, and no one cares if the emergency vehicles can get there or not. And I wonder at some point if the town of Boulder wants to put a little effort into bringing some of those existing driveways up to better standards so that they can be accessed in case of an emergency.
Thank you, Elena. That's I know that might be for another time, but it's definitely something that a town council should consider when they're funding of Jones. But anyone else have a comment on this?
Yeah, it was me. If we're talking about subdivisions, which I think we are, and we're talking about roads and planning, then if you have a subdivision that has a plan for like four houses, two are already in, one's coming in and takes that road that they've got nicely paved and everything, and for some reason trucks are going through it or some other things, or they need to make a dig across the road, we should put it in there that they, if they make a change to an existing road, they've got to put it back the way it was. So they don't give it to the whole subdivision to put it back just for them. And we should make them aware that on the roads, there's so many feet off that road that they can't put fences or anything else on. You know, that's just something that would stop a headache in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Shelley. And I just want to add that we do actually have some of that. I'll send you the documentation, but we do already have some of those kinds of things in our ordinances. So we can, you know, we could not, we won't take those out.
I think that was a great segue, Shelley, because yeah, Tina's right. We have very extensive requirements for excavating on town-owned streets. But that gets into the question that we on maintenance agreements for private streets, we say we have to have, right now we say we have to have one that's accepted by the town. That needs to be replaced by something more explicit about what the minimums are for such a maintenance agreement. But those are, so maybe we could talk a little bit about the two things I'd like, before we close this off, I'd like to have a little discussion on. One is what we require for a private road maintenance agreement to be acceptable to the town. And the other one is just this question about making sure that there is recorded legal access to all the lots because of all these problems with prescriptive easements, as we mentioned earlier on the minutes. So could we maybe have some input about what private maintenance agreements should look like, what the minimums are?
Having not seen one, maybe we could take this as something to get a little bit more research before we are actually speaking about it.
Yeah.
And Elena, I know that you are working on one.
Yeah.
Could you share some of that with
have
us?
Have thoughts about what should be in there? I mean, it seems like the main things in general are sort of... yeah, what is the standard that you're going to hold the road to? What is the procedure for fixing the road if something happens, meaning timeliness, shared costs, things like that? and yeah, kind of what the street can be used for, if it's, you know, making sure it, you know, guests and UPS and all of that, and if you want to specify anything out of there. But those kind of feel like the main things that have come up. And the trickiest probably being the, yeah, like how do you, does one person decide the road needs to be fixed and it gets fixed, or do you need majority vote or unanimous vote or those kinds of things?
Comments?
Yeah, I think that it would be nice if we had something that would say specifically what we want in the agreement. But I do think we need to be careful because some properties, the crossing of the utilities and stuff don't happen, and you know they're already set that way.
Yeah, it seems like this one might be good to come back to when we've all either looked into it more. Yeah.
Yeah. Looking at sample documents is excellent.
Yeah.
You know, some of the points, I think that would be a good thing just to look at that. Let's talk about the whole question.
Wait a minute. I think, Nancy, do you have something?
I was just going to say, I think having a draft to review and read, and maybe that's something that could happen for the workshop next week.
Uh-huh. At least it starts of that. Yeah, that sounds great. Okay.
Other comments? You know, I think things are very important. One, you know, having a legal point of contact for the town to contact about the condition of the road if things aren't being done properly.
Mm-hmm.
How voting is done, that you brought up, and amending the agreement over time needs to be, I think, described explicitly. There needs to be some clear provisions about assessing all the owners for repairs, and how that's done and how that's voted on. And those are pretty standard things for any type of owners association. There are plenty of model agreements we can look at.
Okay.
But that I think looking at some samples would really be, I think, very helpful to start that conversation.
And making sure, Gina, if you want to write on there, making sure that it runs with the lots and not just the current owners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. You might better have that.
And I guess the other one,
if I search
examples. Yeah, plenty. And I think you brought up something very important. And this is one where a question of whether it's a town's concern that with the Anson subdivision, the agreement he had with the Kellys restricted that private road to two lots. So, you know, there's a danger there that people put in something that sounds very good at the time that really binds them in the future. I don't think it's a municipal concern. That's a landowner's concern, but we should make sure there's a process there for it to be amended.
If it's not our concern, then why should we get involved at that point then?
Well, I think in any case, I think the important thing is that the provisions for how the voting and the agreements being amended, because you could easily create undevelopable lots, and that and I guess that's the concern that you always get into with private streets compared to municipal streets. But you know, I think you have a valid point, and Tina and I have discussed this a number of times. How much is it our job to keep people from getting themselves into trouble? And Lee, you might want to weigh in on that one if you're still here. This is not.
Yeah, he's here. Please.
You know, I mean, this bottom question of, you know, you've advocated very strongly, Lee, that we should be just requiring these to be public streets. There's been a lack of willingness on the town to accept them as public streets. That's what almost every other jurisdiction does. It says that every lot has to have access to a public road.
Well, obviously the gold standard would simply be to have public streets, and then essentially all these questions would be answered. That's not the world we're in for a variety of reasons. I think that, I mean, I can come up with probably a dozen model road maintenance agreements in 30 minutes, all of which will be variations on the theme. And I can try to dig a few of those out. John's listed some of the most important parts of it. You know, who does the town communicate with if there's an issue? How do they make decisions among themselves? You know, it's a contract. I mean, we call it a maintenance agreement, but it is something that's, you know, adjudicated if it has to be adjudicated under the law of contracts. And the owners have to be able to buy into it. I would say that the town has to be a party to it so that the town has the power of enforcement, the power to compel the owners to act if need be, perhaps under only drastic circumstances. But I think that has to be another part of the list. I don't think it's very hard to attach some models to, you know, the rest of what I'm trying to put together about these standards. There is always going to be, it doesn't matter how well we write it up, There's always going to be the issue of people who, for various reasons, don't get along with each other and aren't very happy about cooperating. And even if the town has the right to enforce, that's still a difficult situation. So we have to be realistic about, you know, the edges of this. There is an edge where things don't work very well. Hopefully Boulder will never get there. But I think that, you know, and it goes back to the point that Elena, I think, made about at what point do we bring other roads up to standard? Boulder has not been spending taxpayer money other than the monies that it gets from the state on roads. You know, at some point, does Boulder change that tune? At some point, does the council try to create some special improvement districts, probably with at least support from some landowners? There's a long evolution of how you deal with this as Boulder changes and grows. My sense is that right now, a good basic performance driven rather than engineering detail driven set of standards and a model agreement that everybody can use as their model are what you need. Anything that goes beyond that, we're getting into complications and costs that nobody is ready for. And I just think that the way you defend yourself against, you know, problems there is what we already said. You tier it so that if there is a large subdivision, a different set of standards come into play. And if we keep it that simple, it will function until you need to change it because there is so much more development. I know a lot of people are like, say, crossing their fingers and saying maybe there will never be that much development. And I understand and appreciate that. But if there is, then this conversation will have to be had again. Right now, I think we need to keep things in proportion here. We can only solve 85% of the problem. So let's do it simply and move on. This is the type of thing that fits into the SB 174 framework as a checklist, essentially. I think that I wanted to go back that I think it was Nancy who said, you know, want to see a checklist. And that's exactly how I envision it in my mind, too. And I think that for SB 174 compliance, we could have a handful of very straightforward checklists that are non-discretionary. That could be enforced by the zoning administrator or by an engineer retained by the town. You know, John said you have 15 days to approve it, but in fact, the statute allows the town to respond and say, hey, this isn't quite right. We can't approve it. And you can go through four rounds of that before you have to appoint a committee of engineers and have conflict resolution. Those rounds are only 20 days each, if I remember what the statute says, but it lets you go through your checklist. You can at least go through your checklist more than once if there's issues. But the key is to have, I mean, I think when we're dealing with where it has to be that simple, we're back to the illustrations and the idea of a checklist is the landowner or the developer looks at the picture, says, that's what I got to do. They figure out how to do it. The zoning administrator looks at it and checks off the list. And that's as complicated as we're going to be able to make it.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
So can I say, go ahead. All right. So I'd like to wrap up this conversation. Go ahead, Colleen.
So can I make a motion that we go forward with having Lee start a checklist for us to look at? Is anybody
okay?
What does anybody think about that?
I mean, well, I let's answer
this. Second, we're gonna need okay, a second.
Yeah, I'll second it, Elena, and then we can talk about it.
Okay, so the motion is that we allow Lee to go ahead and put together a checklist that we can look at
to start with, like to with the with. Like the picture that we saw and the things that he was talking about. I mean, they're in here too as far as these street standards, but as far as starting a checklist to see if that's how we want to do it or that's the direction we want to go, or to at least give us a start.
Okay, so can I, I'm not supposed to paraphrase it, Colleen, so I guess I think we need to make our motions pretty precise so I can repeat it.
Okay.
Okay, so.
I wrote down the checklist. Okay. She made a motion for Lee to start a checklist to get started.
Yeah, of the things that he said off that picture.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So does anybody, is there any discussion that we need to have about that? Discussion? Go ahead.
I was going to let others speak first. Someone else is.
Okay.
I would like to make an amendment to that motion, that because what Lee actually said was not a checklist, but a set of performance, a draft of performance-driven standards.
We talk about a checklist and you keep saying over and over that it's not a checklist. So I don't care what word you use, but it is a checklist.
Okay. All right. Wait. Let's try this process a little bit.
I spoke to you, spoke.
Yeah. Okay. So the amendment was. Your amendment was, John?
My amendment was to clarify that Lee would start preparing, as to use his words, a set of performance-driven road standards.
Okay, so the amendment is to insert.
So the motion would read that we are requesting Lee to prepare an initial draft of performance-driven road standards.
Okay, so that's a change in the wording. Does anybody have, do I have a second?
My motion is to second it.
Okay, so we have so the motion is, the amendment changes the motion to.
Instead of a checklist, what he said.
To clarify that Lee prepare an initial set of performance-driven road standards.
Yeah.
Okay. Do I have a sec? So I have a second to that amendment. Is there any other discussion on that?
Performance standards like weighted as they are sometimes?
What?
No. Yeah, then what so what mean yeah.
Okay.
Why is it
with that different? Language that he gave us as far as, okay, it has to have proper drainage.
Okay.
Which.
What is the difference between your motion and Colleen's motion, or just a little more specific?
Word specific.
Okay.
Yes, that's Colleen. All it is.
Okay. Okay. I'm fine with either. So are we waiting for a second?
No, we're discussing.
Oh, okay.
Is there any other discussion on it? Okay, so
all in favor. Are you voting on John's amendment?
We're voting on the amendment.
We're voting on the amendment.
Aaron Hughes, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John, aye.
Shelley Price Gibson, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye. The amendment passes. So the motion now reads, can you help me out, Peg?
So the amended motion was to clarify that Lee prepare an initial set of performance-driven road standards.
Okay, so that's our motion. I guess we need to vote on that as our motion then,
you
as the amended did. Motion.
Okay, you just did.
Oh, okay.
And I heard some of your votes.
Okay. The dinosaur, you know. Okay. All right. So the vote passes. We have directions for Lee to continue. For now, would like to make, the next thing on our agenda is the schoolhouse project. Is it, everybody feel good about going there? I was going to say that I would like to make a motion that this actually happen at our work meeting, our next work meeting. I would like to make a motion that this number five clarification of the road and the performances on the road happen at our work meeting, but I'm jumping the gun. So let's just go to number five. The update on the school project. The reason why this is here is partially because there's been a discussion about what we might need to change. And I think ultimately it would be nice to have some discussion about what those changes would be. I don't know that tonight is the night to talk about it, meaning that we are now at 8:20. Do I have any comments on whether to go over the school housing project?
I think we may as well. It feels like
we don't have that much after.
Yeah, we've got a light agenda today.
Okay. I'm going to open up the discussion for the updating the housing project for the school. As I understand it, starts with the idea that they would start with an RV pad and then work towards some kind of housing thereafter. And our housing, our ordinances for using a RV is, I actually sent it out, it has limitations. So we would have to look at, John, you have some in your notes to us also.
All right. Briefly, right now, we have some pretty severe restrictions in living in an RV in Boulder Town. We allow use of an RV for up to 90 days as private camping, non-commercial. And we allow use of an RV as a temporary dwelling for up to a year while you're building on it. And that's it. And we also, in our RV park ordinance, have a stay limit, which is, I think, 180 days in our RV park ordinance. None of which really would accommodate using trailers or mobile homes motor homes as employee housing. The fundamental question we have to answer is, do we want to allow use of trailers and recreational vehicles? And the distinction, one has got an engine to move itself around and the other has to be towed, but both camping type vehicles as employee housing for the long term. And if we agree on that, then it's pretty straightforward to say that there are certain paragraphs in our ordinance that just need to be either reworded or repealed. But that's the basic discussion, is do we want to allow use of RVs or trailers and for employee housing. And I know there are some concerns about it, and that's what we try to discuss tonight, and then also at the October 19th community forum.
There's not an October 19th community. Okay, so let's go around and talk about the issues that we find we would like to have us all consider personally on this issue of. So I think it also is the idea that if someone is building a home, how long, I mean, the amount of time that they can stay on their property on in an RV or whatever, I think should be considered. And so that I would include that. So I'm going to open it up for discussion.
Can I hop in first?
Surely.
You have a memo in front of you that tells you how to solve this very specifically to allow RVs to be used as accessory dwellings for commercial uses, which would include the school. And I think the first question you might want to ask is that enough right now to assure the school and the people who are supporting that they could move ahead? And then come back later about opening it up. As soon as you move it from being an accessory to a commercial use, you're essentially talking about whether I can have an RV be my dwelling. And I think that's a much bigger and more problematic conversation than saying that an employer could provide an RV or an RV space, as the case may be, for an employee. And so I think that my view of this is that you can narrow it down and make some pretty straightforward changes that allow the school project. And then the rest of the conversation could be appropriately part of talking about revising and rearranging the zoning districts and whether in one or more of those zoning districts you're going to have a much more permissive policy about RVs than you do now. But I want to make sure that you address the immediate concern about, hey, how can we do an accessory dwelling for the school without having that conversation get bogged down in what, from my perspective, is a pretty big policy issue about the use of RVs more generally. And so I guess I would just say, hey, let's, if you want to have the big discussion right now, then have the big discussion right now. That's not up to me. But if you want to have a much smaller discussion that addresses the immediate problem, you can do that too.
Can I ask Lee a question?
Sure, Nancy.
Lee, I just, so the memo you're referring to is the one that you sent in April.
Yes.
Are you suggesting that an RV be included or defined as an accessory dwelling unit?
That's what I'm suggesting. I tried to figure out the simplest, absolutely simplest way to do this. And so under the specific circumstances that it's accessory to a commercial use, which the school is included in, then yes, it can be a permitted accessory dwelling. We already permit accessory dwellings for businesses, right? As an overall policy, that was decided a couple of years ago. The question here is, okay, and the school could do that, right? You wouldn't, all you would have to do is change the definitions to make it clear that the school is commercial for the purposes of this ordinance. And then the school could have an accessory dwelling that meets the same standards as any other dwelling right now. The question that's raised is all raised by, we want to do this with an RV. And I understand the expediency of the RV. So my goal in doing that memo was to figure out what's the absolutely simplest way you can make this work for the elementary school. Because like I said, I think the other conversation is a pretty big conversation. But yeah, that's my intent as I wrote this, was to be allowing any employer, because you can't treat the school separately, allow any employer who gets a CUP for it to have an RV as an accessory dwelling with a set term.
I guess I can react.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just for me, that's I don't, the whole question of accessory dwelling units is complicated, and how we allow them and where we allow them and whether they're duplexes. And I actually think it would be more straightforward to deal with our RV code rather than changing the definition of accessory dwelling unit to include RVs, because I think they're quite different. So that's just my personal observation in this. And, you know, it seems like we could make some changes about, including what you said, Tina, that the amount of time that you can live in an RV if you're building a house, because it takes a long time to build a house these days, as well as whether you can use an RV as temporary employee dwelling, it not being permanent, and that we could change our RV code to accommodate those. So just my impression of, you know, accessory dwelling units, I think, are a whole morass in and of themselves.
Okay, great. Anyone else?
I have a thought. It might be a little radical. Unless there's some reason in this by state law or something that we need an RV ordinance, as I was reading through it, I was sort of like, why don't we scrap the whole thing? Like, why do we care if people live in RVs? I don't care. Why should just an employee of the school be able to, but not someone else? Like, if you want to on your land live in an RV, or if someone wants you to be able to, we already have the standards of needing septic and water and all the things to be able to dispose of your waste. Why not let people live in RVs in general?
Well, it certainly has happened.
Yeah, let's just let it happen.
And I know of it being a very long time before someone actually got a more permanent spot. And it, you know, I think, anyway, that's my comment.
Yeah, if we're trying to support more young people that are working being here, it's an affordable option. If someone's willing to let you live in your or their RV on their land, I don't see any problem with it. And if we scrap the whole thing, then it could just be fun for the school project and in general. And it would legalize what a lot of people are doing already.
So I have a comment.
Great, Colleen.
I think my thing is on the second page, Lee wrote one problem. I did not anticipate the possibility that an RV pad be installed at VES. When I wrote the memo, I do not think this is a good long-term idea. Public institutions have an obligation, I think, to promote quality development. I think that after this last year of watching people live in their RVs, that I don't think it's a great idea that we start promoting people living in their RVs because of the snow, because of RVs are recreational vehicles. They're not built to sustain snow loads. They're not meant, I mean, if you want to buy a $100,000 RV, it's built to better standards. But I think that allowing people to live in RVs, especially teachers, and building a spot to promote that, I'm not in favor of. I think you can build a tiny house and put it on a pad, and it's built to better standards than RVs are. I don't want to go in the direction. I don't care what anybody does, whether it's illegal and what they're doing, it, whatever, you know. People live in tents too, you know, but I don't necessarily think that that's something that we should be promoting in the town. And that's kind of my only comment as far as I don't think there's much difference in price as far as a nice RV and a nice tiny home that's built to different specifications, not for recreation vehicles to be lived in.
So would you consider a time frame that you would be able to use it until you built?
Well, the thing is you're talking about putting teachers in here. What if a teacher comes and stays here for 5 years? I mean, are you just going to have promote or invite a teacher to come and teach here and say, oh, well, you can only live here for 6 months, then you have to move it. Like, I think it needs to be, I think that we should promote quality development, especially for our teachers. We have a hard enough time getting teachers here in rural areas anyway, as far as that goes, and firefighters. And yeah, they do live in those because, you know, like I said, for me personally as a town, I would like to see something more quality, especially after this year, watching what happened to the people in this town who lived in RVs. It was not a pretty sight.
Anybody else have? I have more things. If no one else does.
Show a view of a comment before I speak. Yeah.
I'm trying to find my button that fast. Hey, I live around where a lot of people have RVs and they're building and they're being there temporarily there while they're building. And I like the idea of a quality place, especially in our downtown area next to a school. I think that we're talking about what the needs of the school is right now and what kind of RV goes in there and how long they can be there. We've already talked about Ray's RV lot coming in and having employees there and being able to extend employee ones that are employed in Boulder, extending that 90 days. My feelings is I'd rather go that way. Is I've heard the town council talk about extending employing for employees in Boulder, staying there in RVs for longer than 90 days and having that change for RVs. I think the other standard that already exists should be for people that come and stay, that they should either regroup or something in 90 days.
So you're not in favor of extending the period of time?
Yes, I am. That's why I'm saying they're employees, no matter who they're working for, the town council has already kind of talked about it, that they're going to extend that 90 days. But I think they also said they want to keep the 90 days for anybody else that is not employed in Boulder and set a difference in there. And if that's a problem, I haven't thought it through. I can't think of any problem that would exist for having that kind of rule.
Do you have any suggestions on length of time?
Colleen talked about the quality. I mean, it's right next to the school and everything. Those, what she's talking about, these RV campers are made for, you know, traveling and so on, but not sitting there and seasonally taking snow and everything. I agree with her. They're not. So to make it a permanent situation for an RV probably isn't a good thing for a standard for that. But we have to have that right now because we need the teachers and we need a place for them to be. But we should set as a goal a better housing situation for them than just an RV.
Okay.
That's it. That's my 3 minutes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. That was great.
I think this has been an incredibly healthy discussion and exactly the type of discussion we need to vet these issues. One thing I think we do need to keep in mind, there are really two things we're discussing here. One is use of an RV or mobile home for living purposes during construction of a permanent dwelling. And I would agree, in Boulder, getting a house done in a year can be problematic.
Good luck.
So that's one issue. The second issue is use of RVs for employee housing. And then there might be a third one, which Elena brought up, which is just somebody who chooses to live in some type of RV for a long period of time. You know, Colleen, you brought up some very good points that those aren't the most desirable places to live. On the other hand, a huge part of the housing crisis in this country has been this tendency to say, oh, we want quality dwellings, and therefore have created an affordability crisis that is not unique to Boulder, is not unique to Utah. And to some extent, you know, maybe we need to respect the rights of people to say, if you choose to do it, we're not going to stop you from doing it. So I'm sort of more aligned with what Elena has said, that probably most of this RV ordinance could be scrapped beyond the basic municipal concerns of sanitation and health.
Yeah.
So I think we need further thought on this.
I have a couple more thoughts.
Yeah. So okay, that's my time. Let's go around the table again.
I think that, yeah, along the lines of what John's saying about quality, I think it's important to remember that we're not choosing between an RV or a nice house. We're choosing between housing for someone or not. There's nothing on the table for the school other than this. The teachers at the school make very little money. I don't know what the salaries are, but it's not great. And land here is getting more and more expensive. Building costs are going up and up and up. I fully respect that people want quality dwellings, and we don't want to put quality over affordability too much, or we simply won't have teachers and people that are able to work here. I think it's very nice to say that we would like to promote quality dwellings. And most people, I think, don't probably want to live in an RV forever and will try to get themselves out of it. But for those who can't or can't right now, I don't see why it's any of our business how they're living. And if their roof can't, like, or snow loads and things like that, it's not our business to regulate. If you're living in a house that doesn't have those things, that's up to you to be comfortable or get yourself out of that situation. It's not, I just don't think that's up to us. People can do snow removal on their own dwellings. I don't think it's any of our business how people are living, as long as they're meeting basic sanitation and stuff requirements. Other than that, if someone's comfortable with the way they live, why do we care? Would we rather not have teachers than potentially have someone have a problem with snow removal? I just don't. Yeah, I think it's unrealistic to try to put off things like this that actually let people access housing, because we might prefer something that's more, that has higher quality that would otherwise just not happen.
Any other comments for that? It is a hard
one. Having a second conversation. I think there's a miscommunication. Nobody's saying to do that to teachers at all. Is what they can afford, and it is none of our business. But if we're going to get a situation so we can have a teacher up there, we understand we've got to have an RV of some sort, because it's an emergency situation. But it should be a goal of ours as a town to make a better permanent one, for several reasons. One, an RV usually does not have a second out. If something happens to that RV, as a teacher, and I'm just talking as a teacher one, not the regular population, just a teacher, something happened to that teacher where the snow dropped on the roof or anything, that would be devastating to all those kids. That's their teacher. Or a fire. We're just saying, on the teacher level, I would present that an RV is just great right now. Let's get them in there. Let's do what we have to do, make them as comfortable as we can for as long as we can for cost reasons, how long we have to have an RV, but let's plan a more permanent situation and a nicer one. Not a price. It's not about price or anything. To me, it's about safety for that teacher and for what the kids might experience if we don't think of their welfare. Now, what other people do in their life outside of that, I'm fine with them. They can choose it and upgrade and whatever they can do. I get that part. But I think we were just talking about teachers, and that's all I have to say, and I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Shelley. Okay. Anybody have any notion about how we're going to move forward with this?
This is Elena. I'll make a motion that we scrap the RV ordinances entirely.
Can I ask a question, Elena?
Yeah.
Does that mean that you're saying that an RV is a single family dwelling?
Say that again. Am I saying that it's a single family dwelling?
I mean, the way the ordinance works, there are categories of uses, right? If we eliminate all reference to RVs, which is the way I understand your motion, then since people are still living in them, you're saying that they are subject to all the same rules as a single family dwelling?
I mean, I guess I'd have to look into what that means to be subject to all the same rules, but I guess I don't think we specify about tiny homes or other structures people are living in. And so I guess I don't see why we specify so much about RVs.
Okay, I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm just trying to make sure that everybody understands that removing the references to RVs, which is what I understand your motion to do, means that we treat them as single family dwellings, same as any other single family dwelling. And that means that we have a problem in the ordinances because single family dwellings have to meet the codes. RVs can't meet the codes. So the minimum that we would have to do beyond scrapping the references is we'd have to go in and amend, I guess it's in chapter 151, probably where we'd have to work. We'd have to say that RVs can be used as single family dwellings without meeting the building codes.
Can you say that last part again, Lee? I didn't hear that part.
We would have to make an amendment that says that RVs can be used as single family dwellings without meeting the building codes.
Lee, to get us back onto more parliamentary procedure, I think Elena's motion has died for want of a second. So I'm going to make an alternative motion.
Well, I'm interested in having this discussion with Lee, actually, because, yeah, can we do that?
I mean, I'm not trying to comment one way or the other on your motion or on your idea, Elaine. I'm just trying to, as quickly as I can, think of the implications of that change.
No, I understand that. And like I said, it's admittedly a little bit radical.
radical is not necessarily bad. That's not what we need to be thinking about, is that it's radical. I mean, a lot of people have expressed the opinion that, okay, it's up to the landowner, the individual, whoever, as to the quality of and type of dwelling they want to have. There's a lot of discussions on the sides of that, and everybody can imagine what some of them are. And somebody just threw in a note that everything has to be defined or it's not permitted the way the ordinance works. And that's exactly where my comment here is coming from, is that RVs can't be nothing. Okay, how's that for setting it up here? They have to be something in the code. And the only thing that's left, if you scrap all the language that Elaine is referring to, only thing that's left is to call them single family dwellings. And because the code says that the town codes say that a single family dwelling would have to meet the building codes, then we would have to write an exemption in there, I think in Chapter 151, to say that RVs don't have to meet the building codes. And I mean, they can't. So that goes without saying. But I think that's what I needed. I'm just trying to help clarify the consequences, right? I'm not commenting one way or the other on whether it's a good idea at this point. But that's the consequence. You've got a single family dwelling that doesn't meet the building codes. So we have to clarify that that's okay somewhere in the ordinance.
And is that how we treat things like tiny homes and yurts and stuff right now?
A tiny home normally meets the code. That's the tiny home will have the, I mean, and we had the thing about snow loads. Any stick-built home or modular home that comes into Boulder does have a snow load requirement on it as part of the building code. So we're in a reality where I think the tiny homes that I'm aware of and that I can envision happening in Boulder, like with panel construction homes or something like that, are all going to meet the code. They're going to be specifically designed to do that. It's the RVs that can't because of the nature of their construction. They can't meet the energy part of the code that requires a certain type of insulation, and they don't meet the snow loads, and the list goes on and on and on. But the list is somewhat irrelevant if your posture on this is, hey, people can live in an RV if they want to. If that's what you're saying, then okay, but we have to figure out what it is in terms of zoning. If it's not an RV, what is it? The most, you know, the assumption is it's a single family dwelling, and we're going to have to make it clear that those single family dwellings don't have to meet the same requirements as other single family dwellings.
Okay, so there's a motion on the floor to scrap our, I'm sorry, did you say scrap?
I did say scrap.
Scrap the RV or RV. And the ordinances. Do I have a second? So this is the motion has not been seconded. We can move on. Okay.
I would like to make an alternative motion, which I think maintains the intent. And that is that between now and our next monthly meeting, Elena and Lee can go through the section 153.201 and figure out exactly how it would have to be reworded to meet the intent of reducing the restrictions.
You can do that.
Yeah.
I think that is a second.
Oh, sure. Seconded, Elena.
Okay.
Okay, wait. So the motion is that Elena and Lee go through the RV ordinance to identify all of the areas that would have to be changed in order to
remove unnecessary restrictions.
Remove unnecessary restrictions.
And anyone else would be free to provide comments to them, but put the burden on.
Well, a motion is just a nice, clear.
Yes.
We're
going
to have to repeat it.
No.
Okay, so the motion would be that between now and the next meeting, I'll make the motion that we have a committee consisting of Elena and Lee, and if we have anyone else, we can add that.
No, that's not part of the motion.
Okay.
Elena and Lee work on the...
To identify
the areas of the current RV ordinance that need to be amended to remove unnecessary restrictions.
Do I have a second?
Seconded, Elena.
Okay, sorry, Elena seconded it. So it's been moved and seconded that Elena and Lee will get together as a committee to clarify 153 point.
To identify areas that need to be removed and do unnecessary restrictions.
And do unnecessary restrictions. Okay.
On what?
Yeah.
I vote no.
I do too.
I would need to clarify what section, which
are okay. So, okay, then that would be okay. 153, 156, and 153, 201.
153,
156,
six.
And what?
153, 201.
So, maybe the motion's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Go through 153, 156, and 153, 201 to remove any unnecessary restrictions.
Identify them.
Not you don't get to remove them. You just identify them.
Identify
removing them.
Yeah.
But can't we all be part of that?
Can we vote? Can we take this and vote before? I mean, aren't we supposed to vote now?
No. Right. There,
we,
there,
we are.
There's a discussion. There is a discussion before we vote.
Okay.
But I want to listen to her.
Okay.
So I had a... Shelley wasn't finished talking.
Okay, Shelley, go ahead.
Oh, my thing was, is can't we all be part of that learning curve too? That was my only comment.
So I guess this was a question. We're talking about the school housing. Is this related to that? Yeah. I mean, it seems to me sort of a broader issue. Rather than saying, how do we solve the problem of housing on the school property, which may be some zoning questions, it might be RV questions, it might be accessory dwelling. It just seems like we've gotten off topic.
Amen.
I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing to do, but it doesn't address the topic that we're trying to address.
I think it can kill two birds with one stone if we get it such that it addresses the school issue and a larger issue rather than just specifically pinpointing the school. It could do both together in one swoop, which seems more valuable to me.
Any other discussion? Okay, can I have a vote?
John, aye.
Elena, aye.
Colleen, no.
Dolly Price Gibson, no.
That's two, and I'll say aye. Okay, this discussion will be done by the next our work meeting, correct?
No, by the November one, right? The next calendar meeting, monthly meeting.
Okay. This does leave, as Nancy said, the issue of the school somewhat in a. I would recommend that everybody come with a motion based on what they think the school or the school situation needs to move forward, and obviously what we need to do about RVs. The school is definitely looking at the possibility of allowing RVs until they get some money together to actually put in something. That is what we're looking at down the road.
So maybe
an alternative?
A suggestion to the committee. Is that they keep that in the back of their mind. And as you said,
the timeline,
that the school specifically is interested in how to put an RV there because that's likely to be the interim solution. So how would this code have to change that would allow that to happen?
Yeah, and I think that would be the idea, is to change the code so that this could happen, but also maybe broaden it so that it's not just for that specific project, rather than like trying to derail the whole thing.
Okay.
So why don't we talk about employees and just make it that kind of broadness, and it doesn't affect the other part of it. We're just talking about employees and how long they could be in an RV.
Yes. So let's think about that for the next meeting.
Is that the November meeting? Or
November meeting. Okay, so the next thing on the agenda, if I can move on because we are at our point of... Sorry, I'm a paper shuffler. So I'm like, okay. Okay, so the next thing on the agenda is that we are going to meet for work meeting on the 19th. So I'm opening up discussion about what exactly that focus will be for that.
Is that a training meeting or a
work That's meeting? A work meeting.
October 19th.
October 19th is a work meeting.
Yeah.
If I may.
Go ahead, Lee.
It seems to me that I was directed to try to come up with something about roads very quickly before that meeting. And if that's still the direction, we obviously ought to talk about it. I have to tell you, though, that I can't comply with the week ahead of time that people like to get things because it's only a week ahead of time right now. And the soonest that I can see getting something out to you is Monday, and it might be Tuesday. But if that's okay, we should talk about the roads and try to get that discussion to an end. I think that it's better that the Lee and Elena Committee on RVs have until the next month, until November. But beyond the roads, I think it is time to return to the question of how we protect open space and promote housing, which really, it seems like we keep letting details get in the way of these most important questions. And I would propose to revisit some of the prior information, particularly a slideshow that I gave you all, and we'll tinker with a bit about how we regulate the density of residential development in a better way. And I mean, we don't know what the council is or is not going to do about lot size averaging, but we just have to proceed, assuming that they will do the right thing. And that's the basis for the rest of this, a basis for the rest of the discussion. But I'd like to get back to that conversation before we find ourselves strapped down by other details. We really can't do much about Senate Bill 174. We are so narrowly constrained that we need to focus on the zoning so that when a subdivision comes in for the 15-day review, someone can look at it and say, hey, that complies with the zoning, or hey, no, it doesn't. And we have a clear, bright line, which allows you to either accept or reject that application based on the zoning. And so we need to talk about these additional realities. We've talked about them before and never been able to come to a conclusion, but the only thing I can suggest is that we go back to it. So I think that if we could limit that meeting to two topics, one would be the roads, and I'll do my best to get something out as soon as I can, but I don't do miracles. And then to go back to a slideshow that most of you have already seen, perhaps an updated version of it, and say, look, let's start here and talk about how we want to regulate the density of residential development. And that will lead us into a conversation that John and I have talked about on the side, a conversation of whether we need to change some of the zoning districts. If we could do those two things, that would be more than enough.
Do you have any comments from the Planning Commission?
I 100% concur.
I think that sounds great. I don't know, Lee, if you were thinking you would include a draft road maintenance agreement, but we talked about that too.
I will definitely send you models. I'm not going to manufacture a brand new one until I've heard you guys comment on what I send you. But I can find, I've been looking while you guys were talking about other things. I have found a couple already that appear to be potentials to send to you. I'll put more time into it before I decide what to send, but I will definitely include a model agreement along with the performance checklist.
I think we talked about each of us looking for one. So
right.
It's right. Not all a burden on you, Lee.
Okay.
And I understand that this is just too complicated at this point, but if it works for people, would it make sense to try to delay the work meeting 1 week so that Lee has more time to prepare something and we have more time to go over it to do the following Thursday? Would that work for people?
No, I'd like to leave the meeting where it is. And I think that this is a special meeting that we're having where we're not, this is information that Lee's getting for us just to, it's not like we're having a real meeting that we're making decisions on. I'm fine with the 19th.
It seems like it's going to be hard for Lee to get us that in time.
Well, he said he could get it to us by Monday.
Okay. So whatever. I don't care.
Okay.
I'm already ready for the discussion of density and zoning districts. I may tinker with it, but we're going to repeat some stuff that we haven't heard for a few months and try to be very fundamental there. The road thing, I can come up with a good starting point as long as we all understand, as it inevitably is, that it's a work in progress. And, you know, it's going to be a checklist of performance standards. So both what Nancy and what John are talking about will be properly addressed. We'll see. I think if you like what is there, then there's more time to work on it and we can perfect it. The question is just getting a sense of, okay, this looks like it's in the right ballpark. Like I said, if we can do those two things on the 19th, then that's good. And I also, for other reasons, the 19th works a lot better for me than going later in the month.
Okay, great.
So I will make an effort to get that stuff out.
Okay, can I have a motion as to what we're doing at our workshop meeting?
I'll make a motion that we talk about roads and zoning districts at the October work meeting.
Yeah, there's a motion to work on roads and zoning districts, or yeah, that's what it is. Okay. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, any discussion?
Oh, sorry.
Okay. I'll second it, Elena.
That's okay. Just want not to do
it. Okay, any discussion? Okay, no discussion. Can I have a vote, please?
John, aye.
Elena, aye.
Colleen, aye.
Billy, aye.
Okay, great. I am going to pass out some notes on Shelley, this is something that I think you were most interested in getting to. So I will email them right away to you. This is John's description of why we need to change our ordinance and some what directions it needs to go in. We won't take the time to go over it. Let's just have it out. The next thing on the agenda is a staff report.
Can you just send me those that I've been posting there?
Oh, sure. Okay. The next thing on the agenda is the staff report. And so I had Peg put up her description of her job as our recorder, and I guess this is staff and commission report, but my suggestion is that we can make sure that we look through that, but I would like the TC to know that this job needs to be fulfilled. And there's so much that Peg needs to share with whoever is coming in that it needs to be addressed. And I guess I'm actually recommending or asking for a motion stating that we, as a commission, want the town to move forward on this.
On what?
On Peg's position.
Where was it? Have it?
It was online.
It was online. Sorry, I didn't print it out.
It's on the web.
On the web.
Yeah.
Moving forward. So that's probably not going to happen tonight, but I would like everybody to read about this position that Peg does as a recorder is very important to us as a commission. We need to have somebody who's going to be able to that we can speak to directly very easily and get things to be posted properly and on time. And I think it's a big job, and I'd like to have that position filled.
Can I add a little? Sure. Comment. So what's on the web is it's really the excerpt of the memo or an email that I sent to Jessica and Judy Drain early November. So, I submitted my resignation to this position in May, and there was a lot of talk about it. Kind of went into town council, and then it sort of became this amorphous, blending of job descriptions or what have you. The discussion is never completed, to my knowledge, Jessica. It's not been done. So in the meantime, I don't think it's possible for the town to actually decide, vote on something, get it posted and get it filled before the end of the year. So I will be gone. Effectively, I will have resigned at that point. So unless I'm paid to stay on and and I know Jessica is a completely capable person, but I totally also think that the Planning Commission role requires enough dedicated attention that adding that on to what she already does, which is massive, is too much. And a deputy clerk, yes, call it what you will, but it would be a person who's dedicated to serving the Planning Commission in addition to whatever other stuff she wants her to do or him to do. So that was kind of what you and I had talked about and why you wanted me to post my. Yeah, and I
And I did ask her to post it because I think we need to know what she does. So we need to know. There's so much to.
And isn't it in the ordinances with the what she does?
Minimally. There's not sketchy references.
Yeah.
But it does
what you're supposed
but
to
it do does refer to a planning commission clerk.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I want to say on quite a few parts of that this is definitely something that has been discussed with the town council. This is something that the town council will decide. It's not something that they are taking lightly, which is why that we are in the same conversation. They did actually already decide and voted on that it would be a deputy clerk until this last meeting, and it was brought up to have a second conversation about it. So there was action. They have delayed that action and wanted to go back on it to make sure that they have the right information. And so this isn't actually the time or the place where this happens is in this meeting, right? It's in the town council meeting. So that's when your opinion should go forward is in the town council meeting. If you have an opinion of how you feel as a planning commission and the job of that role is, that's amazing and tell the town council, but not necessarily to have like discussion in the middle of the planning commission, because it's ultimately up to the town council of what they decide that position to be in. So just to make sure that that's where you voice that and have that information relayed to the town council.
Thank you, Jessica. I think that I agree with that. And I just want to add that in my opinion, it would be nice if it came from the planning commission as a recommendation, as we are a recommending body. That's why I put it out there.
I think if it comes as a recommendation from the planning commission, is that something that you all vote on and then decide, and then like you're speaking as a whole when you say that. So
that's
just correct. How that gets presented.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Okay. So obviously not all of us have been had a chance to read it. Do anybody have any other?
Since we don't know when the next town council meeting is, but it'll likely be in any case before our next official monthly planning meeting, I'd like to make a motion that we support Tina presenting to the town council our recommendation that we have a dedicated planning commission clerk and that the position be filled promptly.
I'd second that, Elena.
Okay, so the motion is that
if I can, it's on the agenda already for the town council.
Yeah.
So then, I mean, I don't know what the different, you just show up and appear and speak about it like during that time, like, or do you want it as your own separate item?
We are simply authorizing Tina to speak on our behalf.
Okay.
That's the body.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
And so do we get to, I mean, one of the things that I is this whole situation that's going on right now, too, is nobody has talked to any of the other commissioners about any of this information that you guys are talking about. And so I was never asked what I thought about these jobs specifically. I don't know that Shelley was. I don't know that. She was, as far as I don't know that I want. I guess I can show up for the meeting and speak for myself. I guess I'll do that because I feel like the same thing is going on with the zoning administrator. Right now, the zoning administrator, that position has not been filled either. You know, the town is trying to do their best right now as far as what happened before, all the changes that have gone on before. Same thing with the zoning administrator. There's a lot of controversy as far as what they do, what they're supposed to do, who's directed, suggestions, votes, whatever. And so I think it's becoming pretty convoluted myself.
I'd like to...
motion.
Cool. I know. I'm in the discussion though, am I not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I would like to trying to think of what the word is. I think it's kind of to postpone the postpone my motion.
We didn't make the motion. So, and it's only once it's made.
All right. Okay.
Once it's made, it's only by the commission.
Yeah. True.
So, to clarify, you are saying you do not want to speak at the next town council meeting.
On behalf of the planning commission. On behalf of the planning. There's two
things. What are you saying?
Well, I don't want this conflict to be an issue for, I mean, it doesn't make sense to me that I have, obviously, the communication wasn't well presented for the entire planning commission, so I don't see how.
Yeah, and I mean, we can just talk about it now if we want to, because it is simply the question of, like, there's no supplemental resources or anything. It's simply the question of, do we think we need a designated PC clerk or not? And if we think we do, we can recommend that to the town council and they can take it or leave it.
Any other discussion or comments? I mean, okay, so I guess we would continue on the vote.
So this would be a question for clarification. Colleen, are you questioning whether we, the content of the motion, or feel that we didn't have an adequate process getting to the motion?
I don't feel that there was an adequate process of getting to the motion. I don't feel that there was an adequate process of getting to the motion.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just trying to answer your question.
So that was a request for a clarification, which is in order. Okay. Would you rather have a full discussion of the item right now, or just call it to a vote? And
I think it should be rescinded. I don't know. I don't really appreciate the way that it's all been done. I guess that's my whole thing. I don't really know what to say at this point. I think that this was something that has been going on for the last couple of months. It's not been spoken about to anybody else on the Planning Commission. And I don't think that it's fair to the rest of us that we were not included in any of this. This kind of discussion. I think that the town council is trying to make the decision right now. And I equate it basically with the zoning administrator and how important the zoning administrator is to the planning commission and the town council. The zoning, nobody's really been complaining about what's going on with the zoning administrator either. And I think that that needs to be addressed with this too, as far as, you know, April still are. And so I don't know. I just don't feel like we should really be discussing it. I think the town council is taking care of it. That's my opinion.
Can I interject as the addendum to my staff report? Because April's on here as well, so she could speak to the zoning administrator thing. I think at this time, you know, we're looking at the November meeting for the next plan or town council. I think this whole discussion is probably a moot point. They are going to move ahead with what they're going to do. And discussion of whether it was handled properly or there was enough input from the planning commission or anything else it's a valid thing for future reference, but I don't think it applies now because we're at the time where it doesn't matter anymore. So I would say it's not something that needs to, it's nothing you can really do anything about at this point.
Moot point.
Yeah. And yeah. I'm speaking for myself, so I don't know if April has different, she's in a different situation. I've submitted I guess she did too, actually.
Yeah.
We both have some matter.
Yeah, this is April. Yeah, I mean, there's frustration with the town council, I feel, because they advertised and they withdrew it and they advertised. And so that seems to be holding up. But like Peg says, there's nothing we can do at this point.
And if I can say one of the biggest things, because it hasn't been mentioned, of why these are taking so long, is pay that is associated with these jobs and making sure that these positions are being paid adequately. And so it's not just fulfilling the role, it's that we're making sure that these jobs are paid adequately, because up until 4 months ago, these people got paid $15 an hour to do these jobs. And so it isn't just a holdup of like the description of the job or who we think is going to be in this job. It was gathering all of the information to know what everyone did in these positions, how many hours they did in these positions, and then making sure that they were paid adequately. That takes time to make sure that that part is done adequately. We could have hired another planning commission clerk probably forever ago at $15 an hour, not knowing exactly what their position held or how many hours to actually adequately post for. The town council was trying to make sure what has been asked of them to adequately research what they're trying to put on the table. And they're trying to get through the pay scale, and the pay scale has actually been the biggest point right now of just making sure that we make sure that everyone feels adequately paid for these jobs. So when we have these discussions, I mean, you're trying to talk about, I think it is a bigger conversation of you're just trying to talk about roles. No one's debating the roles. It's right now the town council is trying to make sure that these jobs are adequately paid. And that has been the bigger conversation. So again, that's why I'm going to state to my first comment that in this planning commission is not really where this conversation happens. It happens in the town council. And so, I mean, for Peg to just say that that's what her role is, that's amazing to be able to share that information because she does do so much. But right now, that's not the, it's not up for debate of like, oh, she said this, but we don't think she is. We see that it's a massive role. And so to make sure that that job is fulfilled with the correct person and with the correct pay. So
thank you. And the actual hours that are put in on a monthly basis. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, to bring this to calendar, best way is to call for a vote, and I'm gonna and in this discussion, I will vote no against my own motion.
Colleen Thompson, no.
John, no.
Shelley Price Gibson, no.
All right, Elena, no.
Tina, no. Okay, sorry about that, you guys. I really didn't mean to. I just wanted to have it out in the open as far as concerned about how we're moving forward. So let's see, public comments is our last thing before our.
I have a public comment.
Sure.
Only because I didn't know where to put it in. And so I'm just going to go with a public comment. And I want to make sure to say this so clearly that this is not towards this council at all of like, so I don't want it to come across this way, but when we have these talks about things like RVs or tiny homes or temporary housing, it's such an interesting thing to look at Boulder and where we're at now. And we either have $500,000 homes or you live in an RV. And that's a pretty sucky situation to be in for a town if it comes right down to it. Right. So like we're trying to help housing in this point and making sure that people get to live here. But in that way, it's either you have to fork up $500,000 in infrastructure or building your house or the things that go into it when we talk about updating roads and fire protection and making sure that you have maintenance agreements and how big your lot is. You're looking at $500,000 or you're looking at an RV. And not, again, this is not me looking for like, please solve this. This is that statement of like, when we look at a lot of these things in Boulder and like how to solve it or where we're at. I mean, we've done this thing of like, let's protect Boulder. I don't want any growth. I don't want Boulder to change. And here we are now. And it's at a $500,000 home or an RV. And right. So I just really wanted to make that because I know that you guys are all very aware of that, but that's just seriously where we're sitting. I mean, the same point we're trying to get a teacher in and our option is an RV. Okay. It just is hard that this is where we are as a community of that. These are the housing options that we have. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Is there anyone else who'd like to make a comment from the public? Okay. Peg is going to make a comment.
I simply want to remind people if they didn't see Pegboard today that there is a Meet the Candidates meeting on next Tuesday night at October 17th, Tuesday 17th at 6 p.m. in the big room here.
Okay. So
thankful.
Sorry, Peg. I missed what you said.
You're not supposed to have side conversations.
The Meet the Candidates meeting is Tuesday at 6 p.m.
Meet the Candidates next Tuesday.
Is that expected to be like an hour, 2 hours, couple?
2 hour block is
give or take.
Yeah,
okay.
Probably not more than that.
Okay.
Thanks. Anyone else? Okay. All right. We'll just...
Can I make a statement?
Sure.
I don't know that I have to make a conflict of interest statement at this point, but I'm going to say that I am related to the town clerk, and I just want that to be made noted.
Thank you, Colleen. All right, upcoming business. So we have our workshop set. It's just the November meeting, one of which is Elena and Lee's discussion. April doesn't have anything, I don't think, right, April?
No, I don't have a report.
And nothing really coming down as far as...
There's two potential subdivisions coming up, but I have not seen applications or anything, so they're not at that point yet.
And so I would like to say something about that too, is that whatever comes out of the workshop and or your and Lee's conversation, I think we should just think about how we're going to make our motions short and to the point, and they really are better that way. It's clear for everyone. So thank you so much. Anything else, Peg?
You had asked everyone to, is this what you're talking about? You had asked everyone to come to the meeting with a motion to present for the school, how their suggestions for school.
That's right. I did suggest that. So thank you. If you do want to make a motion regarding the school, please come to the November meeting with a motion about that, so we can continue down the line of that discussion. Anybody else have anything that they want to add to the agenda at this time?
It just follow up from our work meeting, like we said, the big thing that we have to do is discuss the protection of open space, housing, and roads, and come up with approved language for those in terms of what we do with the subdivisions. And that's going to be plenty of discussion.
Yes, probably. That's true. All right. Thank you very much.
And just as a remark, this handout here, just read it over. It really describes what we're facing with the state law changes. And we can also discuss that at November.
On state law. On the state law. Okay. Peg posted something on the Utah Leagues and Cities about this also.
I just reset that April 1st. It was a very basic memo. I think there's other better information right now, but
we'll discuss it in November, but no harm with what you posted.
The two documents that you handed out physically today or right now for the meeting that Shelley, I don't think, got, you'll send those to me and I will post both of those on the website for this meeting as materials.
Okay, great. Okay, can I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn. This is Elena.
Second.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
John, aye.
Elena, aye.
Colleen, aye.
Billy, aye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
And thanks, Peg and April, for all they do. I think it's a shame that we've let it go. They love their jobs and they're trying to pass it on. Thank you.
Thanks, Shelley.